Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. LegalShield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? LegalShield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Playwright who's the co-creator and star of the new AMC miniseries, The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live. Please welcome Danai Gurira.
Beautiful guys. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. And we're happy to see you. And I'm happy to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
Of course.
I am such a fan of your work. You're an incredible actress, and you command such a presence every time you're on screen. These roles that you play these extraordinary, powerful, resilient, katana-wielding women. Do you ever feel like you just want to, like, take a break and play Linda from HR?
You know, as long as she dresses cute.
Yes!
That's what I miss. I miss wearing cute clothes when I go to work.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think about that. Not having blood smeared everywhere.
Yeah, like, that's the makeup, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah, you still...
Good smearing and, like, dust. Get some more dust on here, get some more dirt. That's perfect. Now,
yeah. You
action.
Still want to kill zombies.
Oh, yeah. Don't take away the katana now.
No.
Let me hold on to that.
Yeah, I think you're managing it. You managed to kill zombies.
Can I be in HR with a katana?
Does sure. Hey, I think it's an asset.
Yeah.
We don't even have HR here, so our budget got cut. That's not true. We'll edit that part out. what's so interesting to me about this series is that you're not only acting in it, but you executive produce, you co-created it, you write on it. Was it challenging just juggling all the hats in one project?
Well, it was really cool because from where you start, you get a role like, what was that, like 12 years ago?
Yes.
And it's in this show that was massive at the time. And it was just like, I'm just hoping I can keep this katana in my hand and not drop it when they're shooting. And then to go through this whole arc with the character and the journey she's had, which has been tremendous. And I'm very thankful for how she was written. And then to go into actually creating the spinoff that like completes her story with the man who she loves, with Rick Grimes. That was a very cool arc. I mean, the interesting parts of it were, of course, executive producing is a lot of work, but then I was also, there was an episode that I wrote that I was show running, and Scott Gimple was like, don't talk to me, talk to her, it's all her.
Oh.
And, you know, there are times I'm like in this very intense episode, and then I noticed that the corpse in the scene doesn't look dead enough. And
sure.
I'm like, special effects makeup, can you just help me with this a little bit? So I have to jump out of Michonne and make sure she looks good in 3 weeks dead, and then jump back into the role.
Of course, the Walking Dead fans are gonna devour this like a zombie on flesh, but but truly, it stands on its own. If you haven't watched the series, it's its own beast.
Mm, yeah, thank you. I think that's true because it really is the epic love story of the series. And if you haven't watched it, you can really just latch in because you can see what's happened to Rick and what's happening with Michonne and how they come together and what happens there. So it really kind of stands on its own. And yeah, it was. it was an interesting journey to actually get the opportunity, because Walking Dead was such a juggernaut of various narratives, big villains, and lots of things going on. So to actually step into just these two and their journey and a love story in the apocalypse was really, really fun. Oh. And intense.
Yes, you can feel that. I can't wait to, maybe you would consider sneaking me the rest of the episodes, because I don't think I can wait until they come out,
I'll
if you don't mind.
I'll look into it.
Yeah, now the Walking Dead franchise is considered a sci-fi zombie apocalypse, but are you concerned when you look at the state of the world? Is it becoming a little bit more of a political drama?
I think they've been neck and neck for like 10 years.
Yeah.
Really. I mean,
you well know. On its way.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about The Walking Dead and what attracted me to it, because I was scared out of my mind of horror. But what attracted me to it when I was asked to audition for it in like 2012 was the fact that, you know, it was about people, characters, like who would, and everyone was like, who would I be if the world ended, if everything that was convenient to me and normal to me just was gone, and everything was just totally upended? Who would I become? And I think that is actually what attracts people to it. It became like this family show. Like, we meet people, like 7-year-olds to 70-year-olds who were watching it with their family every week. It's how like mothers bonded with their 14-year-olds. I mean, it was kind of amazing to see that it was having that effect. But I think it was really just seeing people, all types of people, navigate something that you can't imagine, but then you almost can.
Yeah.
And then everyone's like, okay, what would I do? What would I become? And people tell me what they've got decked out for the bad day that could come. They've got it all in their garage.
Doomsday preppers. What's the craziest thing that a prepper has ever told you that they're collecting?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I mean, you know, I've heard a lot about peanut butter.
Yeah.
People like their peanut butter.
Yeah, people love peanut butter.
Yeah.
I collect that, just jars and tubs. I hide it under my bed just in case I want a midnight snack.
Listen, there is nothing like a good spoon of peanut butter.
I've got some under this desk. Do you want some?
Actually, I will buy some.
Your birthday just passed. Happy birthday. Her birthday's on Valentine's Day. Celebrate, you wrote this beautiful post. What was behind that message? And tell us a little bit about the foundation.
Yeah, I created Love Our Girls because I just think Valentine's Day is just, it's just such a sucky holiday.
Yeah.
What is it, really?
What is it?
You know, people are expecting things like, give me roses and candy and like, you know what I mean? But I think it is beautiful in the sense that it's about love. And I was trying to like repurpose it about 6, 7, 8 years ago when I had a show on Broadway and it was an all-women play. And I just wanted to like say, what if this day that has always been associated with the day I was born, so I can never disassociate from it, what if it was just about love and loving girls more, so that a lot of the things that they face and the discriminations they face and the struggles they face and the celebrations that they face just get more attention on that day. So I decided to make that kind of the theme of the idea of Love Our Girls, which is just like an information hub. It's just about learn more about what girls and women are doing around the world and celebrate them and support them. And you can't create advocates until you create information or just share information. So that's really all it is. It's just an informational hub to like celebrate women and girls and show them love.
Oh, so beautiful.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you, but consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Musician whose latest album is called Weather Vanes. He can also be seen in the Oscar-nominated film Killers of the Flower Moon. Please welcome Jason Isbell. Congratulations.
Thank you.
You got another Grammy.
I did. I got a couple this time. It was crazy.
Oh, my God. This is how many? Six?
This is six.
Good Lord. Yeah. Well deserved.
Thank you.
Well deserved. And not only are you an accomplished musician, but you are now an incredible actor. You were in Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, which has been nominated for all of the Academy Awards. And you're great in it. Now, did you find that the grind of touring and performing prepared you for the pure stamina you needed to sit through the entire movie, start to finish?
Yeah. I do really good at not peeing, and that helped a lot.
You're well trained for it.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience to see all that go down. I didn't know why I was there.
No, don't be so much. You're incredible in the film.
Well, thank you. And I do believe they didn't let me screw the movie up.
No.
But it took a little while for me to realize that. So they had this guy who was like a dialect coach, right? And all day, every day, he was working with DiCaprio and with De Niro on talking like this.
Yeah. And
I went and met with him, and he said, we're just going to hang out. I don't have any notes for you. You just talk like you talk. And I thought, I know why I'm here. They're saving money on the dollar.
There you go.
Yeah.
Talent and a budget cut. Mm-hmm. Two birds,
it
one stone.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I also heard that an incident happened on set when you were doing a scene with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was an incident.
There was an incident. Do you want to tell it?
I could tell you that. Yeah, I could tell. I would not have volunteered to tell the story,
no,
but I would.
No, I think we should. The sense of humor of a 14-year-old boy, so
oh,
I would love for you to tell the story.
Perfect. So we were in this very small space, and we were shooting a scene where the two of us kind of get up in each other's face, and it's intense, you know, and we're not friends, and we're about to, you know, throw hands, and it gets really serious, and we've been doing this for a couple of hours, and all of a sudden, there were like 30 crew people in the room, and me and Leo. And the camera was rolling, the film was happening, and all of a sudden somebody in the crew flatulated.
You said that in the most polite Southern way. He flatulated. Well, I shouldn't assume it's a he. It could have been a she.
It very well could have been a she. But whoever it was, you could tell that that person had lost a great battle.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Just by the sound of it, you know.
Yeah.
And then, of course, everybody being the best of the best, nobody did anything. Nobody would, ooh, he farted,
no.
You know. It was like, later on, I called it a farticus situation because they were all willing to take the hit for this. But what happened was I started laughing and DiCaprio started laughing. And I thought, oh, great, we're doing one of those blooper reels because I'd never been in a movie before.
Yeah. You know?
I thought, this guy farted, this is going to be great. And then he wove the laugh into his character, and all of a sudden it was earnest laughing at Bill, and I was not Bill anymore. I was a redneck laughing at a farting man. And I realized this is why one of us has an Oscar.
Sure.
And the other one is about a budget for an accent.
You were gonna say that he rolled it into his character and he just said, excuse me.
Yeah.
And just went on. And now that's part of the movie.
I'm nervous. That's what my guitar player said. I'm nervous.
Anytime. Well, I imagine when you're on stage performing that if that sort of thing happens, one of the band members farts, then yeah. You just play louder.
You do, yeah, you do. We have cues, you know. It's hard to communicate on stage. So sometimes it's intentional. It's like, oh, that's when we go to the drum solo. Yeah.
Now, was this the first time that you ever acted before?
Really, yeah, it was. I'd done some voiceover stuff for a show called The Squidbillies, a show that I love.
Yeah,
that was great.
You got some fans here.
I was the youth minister on that show. I had gone to Bible school on a cheerleading scholarship. So essentially, I was just playing myself on that one. That
sure.
was easy. I was in the Deadwood movie just standing there in the background because I just loved the show so much that they let me come stand in the background. And that was
generous of them.
It was really kind. Yeah, it was really. But this is the first time I'd actually acted like somebody other than myself or a youth minister, so it was a challenge.
You're really, really incredible in the movie. Is it true that you just started auditioning during some downtime during COVID when you
yeah.
couldn't tour?
Yeah, we were locked down, couldn't tour, and I told my agent, if you can find anything where people are working safely and I can still keep me busy and do something creative and if there's a good story to tell. And so I got an audition, I got another audition, and I wound up, you know, on a Zoom call in my bedroom with Scorsese and De Niro. And then I got the part. Yeah, it was amazing. It was my birthday, actually.
Oh, yeah, what a birthday gift. Yeah. Doesn't get any better than that.
No.
So I want to talk about Weather Vanes. Mm-hmm. I heard that you wrote the entire album when you had downtime on set.
Most
Is that
of
true?
It, yeah, almost all of it, I did.
Now, when I have downtime on set, I play Wordle.
Yes. I had gone through a lot of Wordle. I'd tried. Sometimes I'll try everything else except what I should be doing.
How did you do that? Did you now have a creative association with the acting process on that film and the songwriting process? Are they woven in any way?
I think so. But that was incidental, really. You know, I didn't know until I went back and listened to the finished product of the album that I had used a lot of themes and names that happened to line up with the movie. You know, in the song King of Oklahoma, there's a Molly. And that, to me, I had no idea that I was spending most of my time with, you know, Lily Gladstone, who was playing Molly, and it was just getting into my brain. And I kind of, one of the tricks that I have as a songwriter, as I go along, I have eliminated ways of editing myself until it's time to start editing. So I don't slow myself down. And so if I'm writing a song, I'm not paying attention to much other than just the puzzle of making the words line up.
And do you play and write in your head at the same time, or do you write first and then how does the process work? How do you not get in your way when you're in the creative flow?
You have to remind yourself, like, am I writing a song or am I editing a song?
Uh-huh.
You know, and those, you can't do those at the same time. I can't. Some people probably can. But I'll start by, like, repeating a phrase. I'll overhear something or I'll think of something, and it may be, like, literally what I'm doing. Like, I might say, there's not coffee in this, and that might...
Well, you don't have to give it away. I'm sorry, they cut the budget, okay? Yeah. We'll get you coffee.
And most of my songs are complaints at the end of the day. But then after a while, you just repeat it, and a melody sort of makes itself happen, and then I'll pick up a guitar and start finding the chords. And you know, I kind of look at it like there's a big, huge field full of rocks, and everything you need is under one of those rocks. And it might be under the first rock you pick up, but you might have to pick up a million of them. But if you just keep trying things, eventually you'll get there.
I feel like I'm just a lifetime of picking up rocks. Mm-hmm. Keep going. You have a song called Middle of the Morning, and you talk about being a strong but silent Southern man. Do you feel like the idea of what a Southern man is or Southern masculinity has evolved in your lifetime?
I mean, we're trying to evolve that, you know, but evidence sometimes shows the contrary to be true.
How so?
Well, you know, in my experience, we're not always the best at talking about how we feel, and that makes us not very good at dealing with our emotions. And things will come out in ways that we don't intend them to, you know, when we're not able to say, I am scared or I am sad. And I don't necessarily know that that's a Southern thing, but you know, it definitely happens a lot in the South, and that's where I came from. And
do you hope that your music can kind of act as a solve for young men to grow up and see another way of being?
I would like that. You know, it serves a purpose for me initially, but I think if your intentions are honest and you're really trying to communicate with people, then that will happen as a byproduct of what you're doing. And I do. I see a lot of big dudes crying at the shows, and it makes me really happy. It makes me really happy.
I think you're making a lot of big dudes cry out here right now.
Don't cry, big dude. You can cry. Do it. You can. This is a safe space, big
safe
dudes.
Safe space. We can laugh. We can cry. You also are extremely outspoken when it comes to common sense gun laws and advocacy. You wrote a song on your album that's about the fear as a parent that you have in this country that many of us feel sending our kids to school every day. Was that, I can't even imagine how difficult that song was to write. Was it an emotional experience for you?
It was hard. The first time I wrote it, I didn't do a very good job because I wasn't saying exactly what I wanted to say, you know. And when I rewrote it, I got closer to what I meant, and then I did it again, and finally I was actually telling the truth. Sometimes that's the process, you know. You want to be vague, and you don't want to hit the nail on the head, but this one really called for that. And I went from, when I'm writing about something that heavy, I find the best way to do it for me is to go from my own personal perspective. Mm-hmm. I don't have any experience in a mass shooting situation, so I'm not going to write a song about that. But what I will write about is being at the grocery store and hearing a balloon pop, and the first thing that comes into my mind is, oh my God, is somebody in here with a gun, you know? And I know it is extremely frustrating for a whole lot of people in this country to deal with. You know, it's something that we shouldn't have to worry about. I think it's something that you know, is a capitalist issue at heart. I think all those companies that sprung up after the Brady Bill was repealed are really kind of pulling the strings right now and selling people something that they don't need so they can feel proud of something that they really shouldn't be proud of, you know.
That's right.
But it's scary. It's scary. And having a child, you know, it does make you think about these things more often. It won't necessarily make a good person out of you, but if you start as one, then it'll make you worry a lot.
That's the truth.
Cheers. I have to smell.
Well, you're going to stay and you're going to perform for us.
I am.
You're going to perform a song called Cast Iron Skillet. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm from Kentucky, so I'm no stranger to Southern phrases like, don't wash the cast iron skillet. That's why I never do the dishes. But you have a way of using these like simple Southern phrases, but there's a much deeper meaning underneath. What was the inspiration behind this song?
I like to make characters and then follow them around and see what they do. And when I start a song, I don't necessarily know how it's going to end. I just like to make characters that you can believe and that are honest and then see how they behave as human people would behave. And sometimes that character is the narrator because this song has two separate stories. Both of them are true and both of them happened to people that I was close to when I was a child. And the first story is about a couple of guys that I went to school with who, you know, went down a bad path and wound up murdering somebody, going to prison for the rest of their lives. And then the second part is about a relative I had who fell in love with a black man and her dad disowned her and never spoke to her again. And you know, these things really happened, and this was the 80s and the 90s, and, you know, they still happen today. And the narrator is trying to give advice, but it's not really good advice. I mean, here's the secret. You can wash the skillet. You know, it's made of it'll be fine. You can wash the skillet. A lot of times I'll write a song that has some Southern, you know, words of wisdom in it, and people will say, hey, man, that's not exactly right. And I'm like, you're almost there. You're almost... Yeah. You're understanding the song, you know.
Exactly right. for you to perform. I'm very excited. Everyone here is very excited.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota number 4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus 2 free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.